This is the HAT Soil Health Podcast, a production of Hoosier Ag Today and the Conservation Cropping Systems Initiative, a program of the Indiana Conservation Partnership. In each episode, we spotlight the numerous efforts around the state by CCSI and its many partners to improve soil health on Indiana cropland. Purdue Agricultural Centers located around the state are valuable resources for Indiana farmers. The centers vary in geography and soil type, and researchers have begun a multi-year project with resilient agriculture plots. Our guests on this episode discuss the research and how it can help you make decisions to benefit your farm. Now, your HAT Soil Health Podcast host, Elise Koning.
Hello, and welcome to the HAT Soil Health Podcast. On this episode, we're taking a look at some special plots at the Purdue Agricultural Centers. And today, I'm happy to have with us Joel Wallman, superintendent of the Southeast Purdue Agricultural Center. Thanks for being here today with us, Joel.
Well, thanks for having us.
And we also have Christian Krupke. He's a professor of entomology at Purdue. Thanks for joining us today, Christian.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
So some of the valuable resources that Purdue provides for Indiana farmers are the Purdue Agricultural Centers, or PACs as they're often called. And Joel and Christian are going to talk with us today about some of the plots that have been established there, and especially how those plots relate to soil health. So before we dig into those plots, let's talk first about your role at Purdue and with the PACs. Joel, let's start with you. What is your role with the Southeast Purdue Agricultural Center?
Well, my official title is a superintendent, but the basic way to communicate that is would be as a farm manager. So you're just trying to balance all the things associated with managing the resources here, and then trying to integrate research and make it successful.
And Christian, what's your role at Purdue and with the PACs?
At Purdue, I'm a field crop entomologist. So I do applied research and extension in primarily in corn and soybeans, and have been doing that for almost 20 years at Purdue. In connection with these resilient agricultural plots, one of my roles is to bring together groups of researchers that are and have been doing this kind of work, and get us into the same room to explore how we can all lend our different expertise and our different experience and research that we've done or are familiar with to creating some of these prescriptions for what a resilient agricultural plot would look like.
So let's take a look at the big picture about the PACs first. Joel, how did the PACs get started? Where are they located, and why are these important?
Well, the Purdue Agricultural Centers are, there's eight of them located throughout the state of Indiana. Many of them got their start from private landowners that donated their property to the university, specifically the Southeast Purdue Ag Center. The state of Indiana gave land to Purdue University in the late 1970s. And so all these PACs have some sort of history behind either a private or state wanting to get Purdue a foothold in their area, because the vast differences in soil types and environments and things like that. So that's one of the big things about having the Purdue Ag Centers, is we get across much of the state.
So, and with these varying types of soils and geographies, why are these PACs important for Indiana research? And Christian, feel free to chime in with this one as well.
Well, I think, you know, society's changing. We have a market-based system right now that's based on what society wants. They want safe food supply. They want it, you know, as economically affordable as possible. Maybe in the future, I think the newer generations are going to maybe want more environmental type priorities on how their food is grown, or and those types of things. So I think possibly we're moving into a new realm where there's going to be a priority put on how things are grown.
So, Christian, why are these PACs located around the state important for the research that you do?
Well, this particular initiative, this resilient investigating resilient agriculture question, we're doing it in corn and beans, but we're also doing it in two locations, looking at vegetables. Many people don't know that Indiana is in the top five in several the production of several vegetables, including melons, watermelons. And by integrating those and asking questions about what resilient agriculture looks like in those, as Joel said, that's where a lot of the consumer and the grocery store pressure comes to bear ultimately on farmers to do things like reduce pesticide inputs, grow produce more sustainably, and that has many definitions. By using the Purdue Ag Centers to investigate these questions, we are a little bit more able to weather the ups and downs, the economics, when certain approaches don't work as well as we thought and so on, than a producer could or a grower. It's their livelihood. So for them to embrace, let's say, resilient practices and say, well, I want to try these things because I believe that, you know, for whatever reason, it could be just as simple as it may pencil out. It could be for some environmental reason. It could be anything else. The point is that the Purdue Ag Centers, being Purdue owned, being Purdue managed, allow us to do some work that can be a little bit more experimental, so to speak. And on these plots, what we're going to do is emphasize practices that are accessible to growers. In other words, things they can do. Now, not research that's far off on the horizon or is untested and unproven. It'll be based on our best guess in our various disciplines, sub-disciplines, of what we could do to move some of these initiatives forward. And by these initiatives, I mean these broader definitions of resilience that include climate smart ag, so more additional sequestering of soil carbon. Soil health, and that includes microbiome soil health. That includes your standard indicators of nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and so on. And biodiversity is the third one, which includes things that people care about, like pollinators and monarchs and so on. Most people, including most farmers, want to have biodiversity as part of the set of priorities wherever we live. And so some of that is going to invariably fall on farming practices, because in Indiana, for example, if you look at a map of Indiana and look at the corn and soybean fields, if you color them in on the USDA maps, you'll see the vast majority of the state, particularly the northern two-thirds, are agricultural. So what happens there has an effect on lots of other systems and so on. And so what we want to explore is what can we do to still have, you know, productive, relatively lower risk practices for agricultural fields and still address some of these goals that we know are important, not only to consumers, but also to producers, also to various components of the chain, the agriculture value chain. And the Purdue Ag Centers are ideally positioned to do that because they're throughout the state. People are familiar with them. They know which one is close to them. And they represent a range of cropping systems, a range of soil types, and so on. So it's a good way to try to put something close to where people are.
So let's zoom in on those resilient ag plots themselves, Joel. What kinds of practices are you implementing on those plots? What are you growing? What do they look like?
Well, this will be the first year that we're going to enter into the planting season. So it's kind of a setup scenario this fall where we've just got cereal rye versus a, you know, a conventional type field with no cover crop and tillage, and you know, Christian and his team are going to lead us through all the different scenarios in terms of what protocols will be for those plots.
And what are those protocols going to look like?
Well, I'll just add on to what Joel said, and that is to say that we started last fall. We started by subdividing intact fields of around 20 acres in half. one half of that field, if it wasn't no-till before, will be no-till from now on, and received a cover crop. And we used cereal rye last fall. And so these are pretty standard and well-established soil health promoting practices. So less soil disturbance, living roots in the ground through the winter and so on. And so the resilient side will stay that way. It will stay in no-till. We'll prioritize having a cover crop on there. So as we go through the season, some of the practices that we'll look at include, on the pest management side, restricting our use of insecticides to times when we have insect infestations, when we have a treatable infestation. And this year it's going to be soybeans. So we would look for things like early season, maybe bean leaf beetle, mid-season, some defoliators, and soybean aphid. If we don't find those things, there won't be an insecticide applied. On the other half of the field, which is what we call the status quo approach, and that's an approach that is tried and true. It prioritizes minimizing risk from loss to, for example, insects. So that side of the field would include insecticidal seed treatments, might include a foliar application of insecticides and fungicides to counter any insects or pathogens that would be present at that time. So that's an approach that's popular, like I said, to minimize risk and to reduce the risk of those sorts of things happening. So those are some examples of what we'll undertake this summer. In addition to looking at the populations of some pest insects, we'll look at beneficial insects as well, because we know that whenever we use insecticide, you have effects on beneficial insects as well. And that includes things like predators, of course, pollinators. We've always heard a lot about that, and bees and so on. And so we're going to start measuring all of these things this summer and see what effects we see. I want to emphasize that in this first year, you know, we don't expect to see giant differences because, as Joel said, we just started last fall. But by starting this now and getting some good baseline data on these parameters I mentioned and other parameters that include soil characteristics and so on, we hope that through the years we can see changes, positive and negative, on either side of the field and compare them over time. And at some point, bring producers there so they can see for themselves what's going on. You know, it's not going to be uniformly positive for either set of treatments. There's going to be ups and downs and probably things we don't anticipate that will happen. But by emphasizing a long-term approach, by emphasizing a systems approach that engages researchers from multiple disciplines, I think we can put our best foot forward and have Purdue offer something to producers that are curious about this. Because as Joel said, they're reading the same news that we all are, that shows that this is becoming increasingly prioritized by grain buyers, by produce buyers, and so on. So at some point, it's important to have this demonstrated, some of these practices and approaches demonstrated, where people can come and check it out.
You're listening to the HAT Soil Health Podcast, brought to you by the Conservation Cropping Systems Initiative, with Christian Krupke, Professor of Entomology at Purdue, and Joel Wallman, Superintendent of the Southeast Purdue Agricultural Center. So you're in the first year of this project with the resilient ag plots, but you've had other plots before on those packs. What are some of the differences between these resilient ag plots and then other plots that are on the packs?
The biggest difference is scale. So as I mentioned, these resilient ag plots are 10 acres or so. Most of us that do research at Purdue typically work in much smaller plots because it gives us more resolution. Higher resolution gives us more control. So when I say a small plot, let's say 30 feet by 200 feet, for example, and then you can replicate that, four of those plots for each treatment that you're investigating, and you can take a 10-acre field and chop it up and get a lot of these plots in. However, with a small plot like that, one of the downsides is that you cannot see or measure some, number one, some variability across the field because you're using only a small piece of it. And number two, things that are mobile, in the case of, let's say, insects, for example, you won't be able to measure and determine if their populations are increasing or decreasing. Are they just moving through the plot? Because when you imagine a 30-foot wide plot, a lot of that is edge, effectively, to an insect moving through. And so by making these plots larger, you just get more power in terms of that's representative of what a farmer might do. 10 acres is still, of course, smaller than your average corn or soybean field in Indiana, but it's at least of a scale that gets rid of some of the variation when it comes to yields and the variability across fields. So it's more representative of what an actual producer would see in terms of scale. And so that's the biggest difference. We're not chopping up these 10-acre blocks into smaller blocks where I would do entomology and Bill Johnson would do weed science. And, you know, we would all have these individual plots in there. That's not what we're doing. These are just going to be large plots where the suite of practices is based on the collective expertise of the group. And so I have my small area. Other individuals in agronomy and botany and plant pathology have their areas where they contribute as well. But across that 10-acre piece, that is consistent.
So it sounds like there's a lot going on at these PACs. And Joel, I want to ask you about that. What are some of the challenges that you find in working with a variety of cropping systems on the PACs?
Yeah, so, you know, all the PACs are sort of similar, but they're also unique and different. And one thing that makes CPAC kind of different is our legacy or history of conservation. You know, we're sort of the no-till PAC, if you will. Pretty much all our operation is no-till, and you know, cover cropping is nothing new. We're pretty aggressive on what we do here. So the resilient ag plots are, they're not going to be that much of a leap for us in what we do. You know, and then there's other things that we do that we rely on some of the other superintendents or other managers that's sort of more in their wheelhouse. For instance, down at the Southwest PAC, they do a lot of melon research. And so when entomology wants to come and do a trial here where they want to raise watermelons, something we hadn't really done that much of or at all, we'll lean on their leadership and their guidance to help us get through some of that stuff. So, it's really sort of a team approach across all the PACs to try to help each other out. And, you know, we're the ones working with the researchers. So, you know, we have our little insights into maybe what one researcher wants versus another one. So, it's more about collaboration and teamwork, from that point of view.
I was interested to hear that you have a history of conservation there at the Southeast PAC. Tell me a bit more about that. How did that come about that you became more involved in the conservation practices, and what has that looked like over the years?
There was a tillage specialist at Purdue named Don Griffin, and you know, the kind of the joke was that he was going to come to CPAC and kind of show that no-till didn't work on some of our flat wet ground here. And you know, they did research for, you know, a number of years, and lo and behold, it did work. And so my predecessor Don Bealey was very active in conservation, and so he pretty much adopted that practice across the whole entire center here. And you know, we've been pretty much following right along with that. And you know, we've been doing cover crops with Eileen Kladifko since back in the 80s, you know, showing that you know, her big thing is, you know, we got to have adequate drainage to get a lot of the soil health benefits that people promote. So we sort of utilize the artificial tile drainage, but then we use the cover crop to kind of protect the water quality. You know, and then we've worked a lot with Shalimar Armstrong down here in the more recent years, and We get pretty aggressive with him on some of the things that we're doing. So it's just second nature to us here. I mean, when I work ground and I start planting into some conventional tilled ground, I kind of feel kind of weird. And, I think that's how most guys that are conventional till when they plant no-till, there's kind of an awkwardness to it, or something's not right here. But for me, it's kind of opposite. So that's the quick background on maybe some of the history.
I'd like to ask you about the soil health as well. And Christian, I'll throw this question out to you as well. How are the resilient ag plots and the conservation practices at the PACs affecting soil health for the crops and the general practices that you're putting in there?
I think Joel addressed some of that already. The primary, the main level that we're addressing the soil health component is minimizing that soil disturbance, so no-till or minimum tillage possible, and increasing organic matter and keeping living roots in the ground year-round with cover crops. And we have probably three or four at least individuals on the team, Eileen Kladivko, Shalimar Armstrong, Yichao Rui, who have worked with cover crops and who are familiar with the science surrounding these approaches. And that stuff isn't revolutionary or untried or untested by any means. And by implementing that at some fields that have been in tillage previously, we can start to measure those effects on the various parameters of soil health, and that could be soil carbon and nutrients, micronutrients. The other component, though, that hasn't been looked at as much is considering some of the pesticides that are used in corn and soybean commonly, and those are insecticidal and fungicidal seed treatments that sometimes are beneficial and sometimes are not. If there's no pest pressure there, they're not beneficial. And so one of the things we want to do is look at how those residues change over time. If we put less of these insecticides and fungicides on the seeds, does that affect the soil health profile? Does that affect some beneficial fungi in the soil or beneficial insects in the soil? You could imagine that it might, but we don't have data sets, long-term data sets, especially not to investigate that hypothesis yet, and to look at, what happens when we change that practice. So that's one element, I think, that is slightly understudied, and that these plots will get at more directly.
And once you have all of that information, then you'll be able to share it with the farmers around Indiana, conservation professionals, and others. How are you going to use the PACs in order to get that information out there?
Well, a couple of ways. And I want to point out, this is a long-term project. So anybody that is expecting, me to come on a year from now and have, or any of us from the team to have these great conclusions and so on is going to be disappointed. There's no way to rush some of these data. It just has to be long term. We only get one cropping season a year, generally speaking, and so we're sort of working at nature's speed, so to speak. So these results are going to be, it's going to be a long grind. It's going to go slowly. But having said that, we will have some results every year that are interesting to share. One of the main ways that I should back up, I should say most of us that are campus faculty involved in this initiative have extension appointments. So most of us are around the state giving talks about our various discipline areas. And so that's one way that we would be seen and heard talking about this work. Of course, we have Purdue Field Days at Purdue PAC Field Days at the various locations, which would be another way that this information would be shared. And I would hope that once this matures a bit, and we have a little bit more data to share, both from these plots and from individual researcher plots that are allied with these plots. In other words, feeding data into them from smaller plot studies, that we could have field days that are dedicated just to these topics. Part of the reason for locating them at areas throughout the state is to have them closer to where people may be, and so that they don't have to travel all the way to, main campus or to the agronomy farm close to main campus to see it or to listen to some of the researchers talk about it.
Right. That's definitely an advantage for our farmers to have those resources nearby. As we start to wrap up this episode of the Hat Soil Health Podcast, I want to ask if anybody wants to find out more information about these resilient ag plots at the PACS, where could they go or who could they talk to?
Well, they can reach out to me, and I can tell them more if they have specific questions. As Joel said, we're in year one. So we're just getting started. We haven't planted our first crop yet. It's going to be soybeans, but get in the ground in the next few weeks here, hopefully. And I'd be happy to talk with anybody that wants to hear more or know more. And then I think what would likely happen is I would direct them to some of the other specialists with expertise in the specific areas. What I do and what I know is, the insect pest management world in corn and soybeans. We have many other people with, diverse expertise in everything, ranging from, the deeper soil all the way up and including and up to the plant and so on, and vegetable crops as well. So a lot of people with a lot of expertise and many years of accumulated experience working on these kinds of questions. The big difference is, and why we're talking today, is because we haven't tried to do this kind of work together before, for a variety of reasons, including that it's hard and complicated. But that's what this initiative is trying to accomplish.
So Christian Krupke there, professor of entomology at Purdue. If you have any questions, you can contact him. Also talking with Joel Wallman, superintendent of the Southeast Purdue Agricultural Center. Joel, before we close out our episode today, what final thoughts would you like to share?
Well, I think, I'm excited to get these plots established and maybe, turn into a legacy type plot where they continue for, over time for a really long time. And, I enjoy the soil health side of things because it keeps us connected to the ground. There's so much work now that we're doing with sensors and autonomy and building models and all that kind of stuff. And it kind of makes you think that, maybe we're going to kind of lose connection. And that's one aspect I enjoy about my job here is that, being connected to the soil. So I'm excited to see what happens.
It'll be interesting to follow the project. Thanks again for joining us today, Joel.
Thank you.
And Christian, thanks for joining us as well.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having us on.
And I appreciate each one of you listening as well. This has been the Hat Soil Health Podcast. I'm your host, Elise Koning.
This episode of the Hoosier Ag Today Soil Health Podcast has been brought to you by the Conservation Cropping Systems Initiative. You can learn more about their efforts and see a schedule of events at ccsin.org. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, create your riches below the surface with healthy soil.